We're going to read a verse from Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. It has been selected for us by Her Grace Radhika Kripa Devi Dasi. Do you know her? You know her. But, oh, there she is. Oh, I thought she'd still there. There she is, see? She selected the verse. Very good. And it's chapter 2, contents of the Gita summarized, verse 55. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Prajahati Yada Kaman, Sarvam Parta Manogatan, Atmanyevatmana Tushta, Stita Pragyas Tadochyate. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O Partha, means Arjuna. Arjuna, who is the son of Prita, becomes Partha. Just as Krishna is the son of Vasudev, with a short first A, Vasudev, becomes Vasudev. Means the son of Vasudev. So Partha means the son of Prita or Kunti. Oh Partha, when a man gives up all varieties of desire for sense gratification, notice it says, when a man. Shall we just say, when a woman gives up, or a man, or a woman, or a child. When a man gives up all varieties of desire for sense gratification, which arise from mental concoction, and when his mind, thus purified, finds satisfaction in the self alone, then he is said to be in pure transcendental consciousness. Isn't that? That's deep, isn't it? That really is. Let's just read the purport, then I'll read the verse again. So Srila Prabhupada says, the Bhagavatam affirms that any person who's fully in Krishna consciousness or devotional service of the Lord has all the good qualities of the great sages. Whereas a person who is not so transcendentally situated has no good qualifications, because he's sure to be taking refuge in his own mental concoctions. Consequently, it is rightly said herein that one has to give up all kinds of sense desire manufactured by mental concoction. Artificially, such sense desires cannot be stopped. But if one is engaged in Krishna consciousness, then automatically sense desires subside without extraneous efforts. Therefore, one has to engage himself in Krishna consciousness without hesitation. For this devotional service will instantly help one onto the platform of transcendental consciousness. The highly developed soul always remains satisfied in himself by realizing himself as the eternal servitor of the Supreme Lord. Such a transcendentally situated person has no sense desires resulting from petty materialism. Rather, he remains always happy in his natural position of eternally serving the Supreme Lord. That's just really wonderful. Let me read the verse again. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Prajahati yada kaman sarvam parta manogatan atman yevatmana tushta stita pragyas tadochyate. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O Partha, when a man gives up all varieties of desire for sense gratification, which arise from mental concoction, and when his mind, thus purified, finds satisfaction in the self alone, then he is said to be in pure, transcendental consciousness. Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that just amazing? Sure. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nera Vishesha Shunyavadi Bastyatyade Jatarne Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Vanchikalpaturibhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So, yes, here Lord Krishna is making the point, well, he's really, negation, he's making the point that all these desires that people get, that we may get even ourselves, even those who are practicing spiritual life may sometimes get these different desires for sense gratification. Eat, drink and be merry, things we see, things we hear, things we feel or could feel like this. That really, by negation, conversely, I mean based on what is said in the verse, conversely, what Krishna is saying, if Krishna is saying that you'll get satisfaction in the self when you get free from these varieties of desire for sense gratification which arise from mental concoction, what he's saying is that all these desires for sense gratification and these things which come out of the mind, the active mind, contemplating what can I enjoy, maybe this, maybe that, how will I become happy, how will I become satisfied? So you follow, by negation he's saying that these things, sense gratification and these material ideas for material enjoyment coming from the mind, these cannot satisfy us. And it is confirmed by some of the great acharyas of the current day, the Rolling Stones, said, I can't get no satisfaction. Yeah, isn't it? They were right. One of the few things I think they were right about, but they were right about that. I can't get no satisfaction. And they say, and I tried, and I tried, and I tried. If you're not familiar with that song, congratulations. I think you're fortunate, actually. Yes, so, you know, and they're such prominent leaders in a sense, and they're confirming it must be true. And it is true, it's so true. Probably we have had enough experience ourselves actually to see that it's true. But the nature of this material world, the nature of our senses, the nature of our minds is such that, you know, they can sort of just go on and on. Yeah. On and on. Desiring this, desiring that, trying this, trying that. Trying, how about a new type of cigarette? Maybe one Prabhupada, you know, Srila Prabhupada, he saw an advert in America when he was just first there, and it was for a brand, some brand of cigarettes, which had a, what they call a menthol filter. Do you know what I mean? If not, that's excellent. I mean, frankly, I've just heard about it, fortunately. But, and the advertisement is, it's cool. And Prabhupada laughed. He said, you are smoking, you are breathing fire, and it is cool. But you must know, and you really better know, if you don't know, you should start knowing, that the business of advertising companies is to make you think exactly what Krishna is saying is really wrong here. The business of advertising companies is to somehow get you to think that these rather useless items for sense gratification are going to really make you happy. And not just happy like, now I'm happy, but meaning on an ongoing basis, you will achieve happiness. Your life will be one of happiness. But devotees, please know, it's illusion. And advertising companies, there's no one here from an advertising company, is there? I hope you don't think I'm criticizing you. But their business is to somehow create some picture in your mind that if you get whatever the product is, then, oh, you're going to really achieve happiness, satisfaction, and your whole life is just going to be transformed into like a giant event of happiness. Let me tell you a couple of, they're not even really stories, but just a couple of things I saw. We were driving back from Bethal, out there in Mpumalanga. We were driving back, we'd just driven out of the town, and we're just, you know, out on the open road for about a minute. And we drove past a big billboard advertisement, one of the big ones. And it was advertising John Deere tractors. It's just, I won't ask you if you know what a John Deere tractor is, but it's just one of the tractor brands. And, you know, these big green tractors. And the advertisement was that there's this picture, there's the tractor out in the field. And you know what? Don't mind me saying this. There was a scantily dressed young lady, seriously, hanging over the tractor like, wow. Serious, I'm completely serious. I'm completely serious. And as we drove past, there was one little old, you know, what would you say, boer, right? From the Plateau land. There was this little old farmer. He was into his 60s, I'd say. with as little, you know, they usually drive these little Toyota open back buckies, parked across the road, and he was looking at this. Really, I'm not joking at all. And you know, it was just obvious. The idea was that he was thinking, if I get one of these tractors, man, you know, the girls are going to come running after me. And maybe worse, but no better, but in the same vein, I was in Russia a few years ago, way out in Siberia, way out in Russia. And we're driving to the temple in this particular city called Irkutsk. So we're driving along and we drove past a shop, kind of, yeah, shop, workshop, where their specialty was car batteries. Yeah, they're car battery dealers and fitters, like that. And same thing, in the front window, the whole front window, and it's like the size of this wall here. There was an advertisement, really, with car batteries. And there were three of these young girls, really, you know, in bikinis and looking, you know, very sort of, I mean, they obviously picked them very carefully. And they're hanging over these batteries like, you buy this battery, we'll be after you. We come with the battery. Because we just love the battery so much. So please forgive me for these rather lurid examples, but it's like this. It is like this. And for, you know, I think any thinking person, you see either of these examples, the tractor with this girl, or these car batteries with three girls, and immediately you think, oh, come on, you know, be serious, please. But they only do these things because they work. I mean, they pay thousands for these big ads. They only do them because they work. Yes, because people are susceptible, people become influenced. That if you drink this or eat that or wear something or use a particular fragrance, drive a particular car, wear a particular type of socks or whatever, that the bottom line is your material sense gratification will increase significantly, and it's really, life is going to be good and you're going to be happy. And let me just mention that His Holiness Jayadvaita Maharaj, I think many of you would have heard of him, he said that these advertising executives should simply be lined up against a wall and shot. Now, devotees, can we move forward a bit? We usually, every Sunday, wherever I go, we usually have this competition. How many people can we fit in the doorway so that no one else can get in? But really, so the thing is this, what Lord Krishna is saying here, you know, it's a very important point which people don't perhaps consider so much, that these desires for sense gratification, they come from mental concoction. that the mind is just thinking about different things, basically along the lines of, how am I going to enjoy? How am I going to enjoy? Then thinking of how I might be able to enjoy in this way, or that way, or some other way. Or, you know, if I get this girl, or that car, or this something, or other, or this computer, whatever it may be, then I'll get satisfaction. But it's the mind. It's just the concoction of the mind. What a lot of people don't understand is that these bodies we have right now, which we are inhabiting right now, and which generally people think to be themselves, this body is just one big mental concoction. Right? He's laughing. He thinks I'm, you think I'm joking? No, because you know what Krishna says, right? In Bhagavad Gita chapter 8, verses 5 and 6. Yes? No? I didn't hear. Well, Krishna says, well, antakale chamame vaya smaran mukta kalevaram ya prayati samad bhavam tyajat yante kalevaram. But I wanted to focus on that second. But then, it's verse 6. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajat yante kalevaram tam tam evaiti konteya sada tad bhava bhavata. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, O son of Kunti, again that's Arjuna, that state he will attain without fail. Now all of us have attained a state. We have attained these bodies already. We've already lived exactly what Lord Krishna's talking about here, precisely. We were all, every one of us, were in a particular, some sort of state of mind, whatever it may be, have been, just coming up to when we left our previous bodies, when we died, whenever it may have been, some years ago. So we were all in some state of mind, and based on that state of mind, specifically, and very precisely, and basically only based on that state of mind, we now have these bodies. Take a look at your body and think, how did I get this one? I got one of these. Look, I got a white one. He got a Gujarati one. What happened? He got a... No, but a Sutu or Zulu? Southern Sutu. Sutu. Okay, he got a Sutu one. Yeah, I got a white one from New Zealand. Really? But look, we all got them. Yeah. We all got them, and we got them exactly as Krishna is saying. It's all very specific, based on and only based on the state of mind we were in when we departed, when we died, when we left the previous body. And then Krishna does say, as Savyasachi Prabhu so kindly quoted, antakale chamame va smaran mukva kalevaram ya prayati samad bhavam yati nast yatra samshayaha. And whoever at the end of his life quits his body remembering me alone at once attains my nature. Of this there is no doubt. Oh yes. Yeah, Krishna's being very emphatic in this particular, In both verses, yes, once it appears in each verse, one time. He uses the word, if you're a little familiar with Sanskrit, he uses the word Ava. Ava is a term of emphasis in Sanskrit. Ava translates as certainly, definitely. Yeah. So in both verses, he's saying that you definitely. It's not like you may, or you possibly, or probably, or there's even a 90% chance. Ava means definitely, that's it, certainly. So both these things apply then, that whatever state of being you remember when you die, Prabhupada translates, he will attain that state without fail. That's Ava, without fail. And in this other verse we just read just now, that whoever at the end of his life quits his body remembering me alone at once attains my nature, of this there's no doubt. Ava, it's definite. So it all depends on your state of consciousness. And then of course the next question would be, how to be in a particular type of consciousness at the time of death, at least, maybe not just at the time of death, but yeah, what to do. Is it like that if you see the time of death coming somehow or other, you know, anyway, somehow, some people, they get warning, they get some cancer or something like that, or, you know, sometimes they may be in a place people are being shot like a war zone, and then they know, you know, it can just come, it's probably just going to come. So in such a case where people have warning and they know that it's going to happen, I got to be ready right now. So you might argue that a person who finds himself in such a situation could say that, okay, it's going to happen right now. I'm going to fix my mind on Krishna. There you go. Just like that. Whereas, you know, some minutes before, when it was not clear that that was going to happen, you were just thinking about life and whatever and what's going on in the world and things, you know, different things. But now suddenly, oops, I'm going to die. Right, okay. Focus your mind. But the time of death is quite a dramatic experience. We hear sometimes of people dying in their sleep. I think that generally the idea is there was no one around when they died, and so no one saw. Anyway, whatever. But the thing is this really, that to expect or hope to be able to just fix your mind in a certain consciousness just like that at the time of death, and to expect that you're going to be able to maintain that consciousness through the drama of death, it is something like, at least an example we can use, which many of you will be familiar with, it's something like if you're going to university and you're doing a 3-year course, a 4-year course, a 5-year course, you know, these are sort of typical courses in university, but your program is, as they say, you just want to have a big jowl. And at the university, your main program is meeting members of the opposite sex, testing different varieties of dukkha, and going to various types of social events, parties, and so on. Yeah. And then when the final test comes after 3 or 4 years or so, and it's tomorrow, and you just didn't bother for the last few years, then suddenly you think, ah, okay, I'm just going to focus my mind and just learn everything for the exam tomorrow. Isn't it a fact? It's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen at all. So similarly with the time of death, the state of mind a person will be in at the time of death, this crucial, critical point where everything is brought to a head, and then, you know, it's just the big cutoff. So the thing is, the state of mind you'll be in, it'll be sort of like the end result, the culmination of how you, what the type of mentality you've cultivated during the course of your life. Not that you can just think of anything and just that's it. But no, it will naturally come to that. Whatever you've been most attached to during the course of your life, you'll remember that. And therefore, we should, in the course of this life, cultivate remembering Krishna. And not just remembering like in the sense of sitting there and trying to remember, but live the life. When you live the life, then it reinforces the remembrance and it nourishes the remembrance of Krishna. When you're serving Krishna and dedicated to his service, and that's what you want to please the Lord, then your consciousness naturally gravitates towards him. So but what Krishna is talking about here is at least the first part. When a person gives up all varieties of desire for sense gratification which arise from mental concoction, and when his mind thus purified finds satisfaction in the self alone, then he's said to be in pure transcendental consciousness. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada elaborates and clarifies that it's not really possible just to turn off your mind, you know, give up all varieties of desire for sense gratification, just stop thinking about these things. But then, you know, it's so deeply ingrained, after a while probably you're going to find you just start thinking of these things again. Because old habits die hard, but they die very hard. They don't want to die. Yeah. They fight back, even from the grave. You know? You thought you got rid of some material desire. Whoops, and it comes back again. Where did that come from? It came from you. Yeah. Didn't come from nowhere. So the point is, Krishna's saying, we have to give up these varieties of desire for sense gratification, which arise from mental concoction. And, you know, like we mentioned, this body has arisen from mental concoction directly. It's simply arisen from mental concoction. And we're living now in terms of further mental concoction. And people, you know, they often, did you ever hear of a movie called The Secret Life of Walter Mitty? Have you heard of it? Really? Any of you others? When I was a child, it was Danny Kaye, was Walter Mitty. And Walter Mitty, he's this guy. He's a daydreamer. He doesn't do anything. He just sits there and thinks about stuff. And that's the secret life of Walter Mitty, that he just sits there. And I remember, I mean, this is, I'm talking now about more than 50 years ago, actually, probably between 50 and 60 years ago, I saw that movie a few times. And he dreams, somehow the idea comes about being a pilot. And suddenly he's flying through the sky. It's the secret life of Walter Mitty, you know, his daydreams. Yeah. So the mind is like that. And if you just sit down, you'll find your mind will start taking off sooner or later. You know, it may start thinking about work. It may start thinking about some family matters, financial matters. What's going to happen to Mr. Zuma even? But you'll find your mind will start going down some path. Yeah, considering something. But what we're meant to do, Krishna's saying here, is give up these desires. So how are we going to do that? We're just going to sit down and tell the mind, that's it, stop. Forget it. Forget it. Prabhupada told the story, many of you will have heard, of the genie in the bottle. You know that story. Anyway, there was a genie in a bottle, and there was a king and his minister, and the minister found the bottle, and the genie came out and said, you got to engage me. I'll do anything. You just tell me. I'll do it. But the thing is, if you don't keep me busy, I'll kill you. So the king and his minister thought, no problem, we got plenty to do. They told him, clean the palace. And they, you know, off went the genie to clean the palace, and they thought, no problem, he'll be back in a week. And that'll be time to clean the palace again. He was back in 5 minutes, he cleaned the palace. He said, give me something to do. Clean the palace. Give me something to do or I'll kill you. Okay. Clean Midrand. Clean the cut the kingdom. Clean Johannesburg. Okay. And he was off. And they thought, no problem, it'll take him months. He was back in 10 minutes. It's done. Give me something to do, or I'll kill you. Okay. Go and meet all the citizens one by one, find out what their desires are, fulfill all their desires. No problem, off he went. And the king and the minister thought, he'll never be back, because they got too many desires. He was back in 15 minutes. Done. Give me something to do or I'll kill you. And the minister, you know, he's moving towards them to kill them. The minister said, you know what my mother told me? She told me, when the time of death comes, you must chant, Hare Krishna. And the genie went, Hare Krishna. Now what? And the minister got the idea, aha. So he told the genie, okay, you chant after me. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Now what? Do it again and again until further notice. That's the story. And the genie became a nice devotee. Yes. It'd be good having that sort of devotee, wouldn't it? Yeah. So in this little story, which Srila Prabhupada told, The genie represents the mind. It can do so many things. It's very powerful. But if you don't keep it engaged, it'll kill you. If not literally kill you, I mean, it may actually literally kill you. This is what happens to people who commit suicide. Just the mind is just so out of control. But for a devotee, it may not kill you in that sense, but it can kill your Krishna consciousness. Because it'll just be going here and there and contemplating this and that and, you know, this girl and that boy and that, you know, car and this movie and, right? How many times can I watch Dilwale Dulhana Le Jayenge? I read a few years ago, some lady had seen it, I forget how many hundred times, but it was the world record, because it's been running apparently for I think 26 years in one movie theater somewhere in Mumbai, yeah, and she's just seen it again and again and again and again and again and just hundreds of times. So, yes, so the mind, this is what Krishna's talking about. These desires for sense gratification, eat, drink, and be merry, see something nice, I want it, hear something nice, I want it, feel something nice, I want it, taste something nice, I want it, and all these things. The mind becomes totally preoccupied and engaged. But Krishna is saying we have to give up all these varieties of desires. How to do that? Not, as we mentioned, but by just telling the mind, no. Stop. Because your mind will not stop. It may stop momentarily, but shortly, very shortly, it will be up and running again. It's as if the mind has a mind of its own, you could say. Actually, the mind is a separate entity. Yeah. It's not you. It's another thing which is attached to you. So, but what Prabhupada's saying here in the purport, and it's really so important that artificially such sense desires cannot be stopped, but if one is engaged in Krishna consciousness, then automatically sense desires subside without extraneous efforts. Did you get that? Therefore, one has to engage himself in Krishna consciousness without hesitation. For this devotional service will instantly help one onto the platform of transcendental consciousness. The highly developed soul always remains satisfied in himself by realizing himself as the eternal servitor of the Supreme Lord. So this is what is required, not just being very hard with the mind and just trying to control it rigidly, like an animal, you know, just violently controlling it, forcing it, whether it likes it or not. No, but by positively engaging the mind in devotional service. And because that is the natural activity of the mind, the natural function of the being, then when we become engaged like that, when the mind becomes engaged like that, then the mind becomes satisfied. The mind that otherwise was racing here, there, different places. Why? Looking for satisfaction. Yeah. Where will I find it? Will I find it here? No. Then let me see if I can find it here. No. Pursuing all these different interests, But when the mind, the senses, the body, one's being is engaged in devotional service, which is our natural function, then we become satisfied. And not just satisfied, but blissful. It becomes wonderful. Even if you don't have much materially. Prabhupada gave the example of the fish taken out of water, famous example. You can take a fish out of water and give it anything. You know, motor cars, mansions, money, etc., etc. It doesn't matter. It won't be satisfied because it's in the wrong environment, the wrong space, the wrong situation, the program. You know, on a foundational level, the program is just wrong. But as soon as you put the fish back in water, then even if he's got no house, no car, and no money, zero, but he'll be satisfied because he's in his natural environment. So when we get into our natural environment, meaning program of activity, way of life, then we become satisfied because this is where we fit in. Otherwise, you know, the famous example, try to push a square peg into a round hole. You try, it just won't work, even if you sort of get it partly in on an angle, but it's just not right. But yeah, but we fit into devotional service, and the mind finds satisfaction in devotional service. It's very nice. Prabhupada gave also the example, another example, of the hand in relation to the body. That the hand once went on strike, thinking, I put the food in the mouth all the time, I get none. You know, this is exploitation. And it's not fair. And I'm just not going to take it any longer. I'm going to go on strike. I'll join the EFF. And we'll just go become professional strikers. And anyway, sorry. But, yeah, now what I'll do, I will take the food myself and I will enjoy, just see. I will look after my own interests directly. But obviously, after a little while, you know, no food is being eaten, just trying to squeeze it in somehow. Obviously, after a while, the hand is going to start feeling weak, right? Because no nourishment is getting to it. So then, you know, put the food back in the mouth, then the hand starts feeling all right. So there's a very good example which Prabhupada gave. We are part and parcel of Krishna. When we satisfy Krishna, we become satisfied. Yeah. Although we might think, it might appear to be logical, that if we try to satisfy ourselves, then we'll be satisfied. But it doesn't work. If it worked, there'd be a lot more happy people in the world today than there are. So, but it doesn't work. Just like the hand was trying to satisfy himself directly, get that samosa, paneer and sweet corn, and just squeeze it in under the fingernails and just, you know, get it somehow, and I'm going to really enjoy it. But it just doesn't work. Although you might think this is the way to get happiness, you just get it yourself. But it doesn't work because we're part of something greater. We're part and parcel of Krishna, and when we satisfy Krishna, then we become satisfied. Then the mind becomes satisfied, and we become peaceful. It's very nice. Very nice. This is Krishna consciousness. And actually, it's very simple, and anyone can do it. It's not just for some special people, some in-crowd, some people who have certain special characteristics or qualities, they can do it. But your average person in the street, it's just too esoteric for them. Krishna consciousness is not like that at all. Not like that at all. A child can do it. Even an animal can do it, actually. Yeah. So, and this is much more satisfying. Much more. This is actually satisfying compared to material existence, which is, well, you know, as the Acharya said, I can't get no satisfaction. And they still didn't get it. Well, that was 1965. I know. You know how I know? Because I went, the Rolling Stones came to New Zealand and I saw them live in January 1965. Seriously. And that song had just come out and it was the top of the hit parade. A little confession. The bad old days. And they're still not satisfied. Because they're still singing the song, I believe. Yeah. And they haven't, well, I don't know really, but I'm pretty sure they haven't come up with a song now. I found satisfaction. And I'm really satisfied now, and it's great. Forget it. Just forget it. An interesting example, just it's a very interesting little example I'll give to close, except for the questions, is that Lord Shiva, any of you from Hindu backgrounds, which is most of you, if not all, but so many of you, would have heard of Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva, as a demigod, his duty, one of his duties, he has different duties, but one of them is to fulfill the material desires of people who worship him. And he does that. And therefore he's known as Ashutosh, one of his names. Ashu, Asha, means desire. And Tosh means to satisfy. If I'm not mistaken, well, I don't know, let me see. Tushta, yeah, Tushta. In Sanskrit, in this verse we're reading, Tushta means satisfaction. So Ashutosh is a name of Lord Shiva. It means he who easily satisfies, easily fulfills people's material desires. So, but you see Lord Shiva. You see pictures of Lord Shiva. Usually, or often, or usually, or often, he's sitting under a tree, a big banyan tree, sitting cross-legged. Often you see him like that, with his beads, Rudraksha Mala usually, different type of beads. But he's sitting there, his eyes are closed, he's chanting some mantra, he's meditating deeply. You see pictures of Lord Shiva like that. You know what he's chanting? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, but then because he's a demigod, he has this duty to fulfill people's desires. It's his duty. It's not that he volunteered to do it, that, you know, I must do this. But he was told, please, do this duty. Fulfill people's material desires. So he does it. So there he is, though. He's chanting Hare Krishna, etc. You know, he's deep in meditation, fully satisfied, sitting under his tree. And suddenly, knock on the door. He doesn't actually have a door, in fact, but let's just save it. Why not? Someone arrives. Lord Shiva, Lord Shiva, Har Har Mahadev. Lord Shiva, I worshipped you, and you got to fulfill my desires. Okay. And Lord Shiva is like, oh no, it's one of them again. And he has to come out of his meditation. And okay, what do you want? I got a list. Yeah, I want a new car. And I want, you know, new house, Lani house. And I want, what else? I want money, paisa. What do they say? Paisa peg to lasha deg. I want money. And I want clothes. Oh, I want clothes. Pierre Cardin, Christian Dior. Oh, yeah. And for my wife, Versace sari from Benares. And Lord Shiva says, listen, just give me the list, all right? You want a car? Take two. You want a Lani house? Take a palace. You want R1 million? Take 10 billion and just get out. And just go. This is why he's easily satisfied. Not because he thinks, wow, it's so nice giving people these things. Because he wants to get rid of them. It's his duty, he has to do it. But he wants to get rid of them as quickly as possible so he can get back to his chanting, his meditation, because that's where the nectar is. And that's where he gets real satisfaction. And on top of that, on top, he's living under a tree. He doesn't have Pierre Cardin, Doty, and Courtesans. No, he has some animal skin or just some reject piece of cloth he picked up on the road around his waist. And he doesn't have Rolls Royce, Mercedes Benz. He rides on Nandi the bull. So he is not interested because he is in the state. He's actually Krishna conscious. So he's not interested. Although it's his duty and he has to satisfy these people's desires. Okay, devotees, we got a few questions here. Let's try and answer a few. At the time of death, if one may be attached to the spiritual master and remember the spiritual master, will this deliver the devotee? You will go to wherever, whoever, whatever place, whoever person, wherever they are. Yeah. You follow? So if you think of the spiritual master, you'll go to him. Basically means you'll go to Goloka Vrindavan because he's there with Krishna. Yeah. If you remember a bogus, so-called spiritual, master, not actually such, Prabhupada Giriraj Maharaj was telling us some time ago, he told us how he met a man in Calcutta who, I will not mention the name of the, spiritual person he was attached to, but he was a very popular one. Say no more. Except he had fuzzy hair, but no. Say absolutely no more. It was not Jimi Hendrix either. But he was just as the devotees are with Krishna, this man was with this person, morning to night, just completely. And Maharaj said he asked Prabhupada personally, where will that person go? And Prabhupada said, wherever that person goes, which unfortunately, well, he already went, but it's not a good place, actually. Yeah. Right. Please explain, if someone dies in an accident, is it the same or similar condition of dying? Or similar condition of committing suicide? Well, it depends, you know. If you're a devotee and you're fixed in Krishna consciousness, you know, Prabhupada told famous story about the sage who blessed four people about living and dying. I won't go through the whole story, but there was a devotee. There were four people, a butcher, a prince, a brahmachari, like young student devotee, and a devotee, very advanced. And the sage blessed them all. Anyway, he blessed the butcher. You don't live and you don't die. You don't live and you don't die. Because your living now is too horrible, impossible. But when you die, oh, where are you going to go? Oh, that's going to be too much. So you don't live and you don't die. Then the prince, you live and you don't die. Because now you're living, you're a prince, you're a rich man, and you got whatever you want. But when you die, because you're living such a loose lifestyle, when you die, oh, it's all going to catch up with you. So live and don't die. And the young brahmachari, he's not such a young brahmachari, but he's a brahmachari. You die and you don't live. Hare Krishna. Because at least, you know, the young brahmachari student means young fellow, youngster, like school age in the ashram. And, you know, he's under the supervision of the spiritual master moment to moment. And as a result, he's just focused because, you know, he's under the direction. So now he's fixed in Krishna consciousness. But when he graduates and goes home and perhaps gets married and works and has to get money and, you know, look after so many things, then his mind may be distracted. But if he dies now, he's fixed in Krishna consciousness, he'll go to Krishna. So die now, don't live. And the devotee, the great devotee, you live or you die, it doesn't matter, it's up to you. You choose. You live, you die, it's the same. Because you're with Krishna always. So with a great devotee, like an advanced devotee in regard to this question, if someone dies in an accident, they're going to be fixed in Krishna consciousness and just go to Krishna just like that. Relatively painless, quite likely. Yeah. But someone else, like particularly just ordinary materialistic person, then it's kind of a bit of a shocking way to die. But for people who are materialistic, it's not that there's really any nice way to die. Because whatever the circumstances, they're going to be in confusion, pain, bewilderment. Yeah. How should devotees conduct themselves so that they're not affected by the material energy? Hare Bol. Well, simple answer. Kirtaniya Sada Hari. Just always chant. Just keep chanting. That's all. Yeah. With the political issues that we're currently experiencing in South Africa, whether affecting us directly or indirectly, leaving this country, would that be a good option? would the karma we're experiencing in that context follow us wherever we go? Ha ha! That's an intelligent question, isn't it? You know, Srila Prabhupada made the point that in the Bengali language, we have a Bengali here. Where is she? Oh, there she is. Anyway, Prabhupada said she can tell us because she's full Bengali. But Prabhupada said the word for destiny and the word for forehead, they're the same word. Is it? Okay, she confirmed. She confirmed. So Prabhupada said that. In Bengali, the word for destiny and the word for forehead, they're the same word. So there's a saying, Bengali saying, wherever you go, your forehead goes with you. Right? That's the way it is. You can't leave your forehead behind. So yeah, good one. Good one. So therefore you should all stay with us here in South Africa and not run off to New Zealand or Canada. And particularly, anyway, okay. Okay, we're almost there. Wow, now what? Now there's a question here, number 5. Who wrote this? I'm afraid I am struggling to read it. I something, the mind is totally, is it emotion? Unless someone can volunteer as the person who wrote this, I'm going to have to skip it because I can't follow it. Who was it? I feel inside going deep and deep, but I want to know what is mukti and what is moksha. Anyway, let me just... I feel inside, this is not the whole question, but going deep and deep, I want to know what is mukti, what is moksha. Okay, that we can say something about. Mukti and moksha, they're synonyms. As six and half a dozen are synonyms. Yeah? So mukti and moksha are synonyms, two words for the same thing, meaning liberation. I want to know, but I want to know what is liberation. You know, ultimate liberation is muktir, the Bhagavatam says, muktir hitvan yata rupam swantastainik. No, what is it? Swarupena, excuse me. See, Brahmachari, he's good. Muktir hitvanyata rupam swarupena vyavastati. Mukti, the word is used. Muktir hitvanyata rupam. The real rupa means form or nature or like that. The real nature, the real form of mukti is swarupena. That you become situated in your natural position means as the eternal servant of the Lord. Yeah. Here we go, last one. Why must we chant 25 rounds on a kanase? Why not another number like 24 rounds? I say, what a nice question. Well, look, you know, I think I mentioned that we don't actually have to chant 25 rounds on a Kadasi, although it's kind of recommended. It's like a guideline, it's like something like that. Yeah. But what we do have to chant, at least devotees who are initiated or who would like to be initiated, we chant 16 rounds minimum every day. And so why not 15, why not 17 then? Right? Reasonable question. Why minimum 16? The thing is this, that in order to get through the day in Krishna consciousness, all the different challenges and things that happen, we all know life is not easy. So in order to get through the day in Krishna consciousness, without your consciousness becoming, you know, susceptible to being influenced, affected by bad association, which is probably there in your job to some degree, yeah, or just, you know, just becoming tired. So Prabhupada, in his, you know, transcendental expertise, set 16 as the minimum number, that if you chant them nicely, particularly in the morning, then you should be able to get through the whole day in Krishna consciousness and not find that your consciousness is going down and, you know, you're becoming materially influenced. And an example which can be given to illustrate the principle is, if you want to drive from here to Durban or here to Cape Town, from here to some somewhat distant place, you'll need a minimum amount of petrol. If you've got more, that's all the better. But at least you need the minimum. Otherwise, if you've got less than the minimum, then you're going to run out on the road and get into trouble. So like this, in order to get through the day in Krishna consciousness, we need a minimum amount of transcendental nourishment or shakti, power, like that, to get us through everything. Yeah. And, you know, without sort of just going down spiritually at some point later on during the day. So 16 is set as the minimum, and you do more, all the better. Fantastic. Yeah. But otherwise, 16 is the minimum. Otherwise, you'll tend to feel, if you chant less, like particularly if it's quite a bit less, like 8. I mean, 8 is a lot better than 0. But still, you know, you chant 8 rounds, and you'll definitely find after a while, your consciousness loses sort of its edge. Yeah, yeah, and will become a little more susceptible to material influence. So that's the idea. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Ekadasi Vrata ki. Go Premanande. Thank you all very much. And this is our MC, by the way, coming.